important not to get too hung up, I think, on the correct interpretation of what is what. What is the right interpretation? I don't think there is a right interpretation for a poet, frankly. I think that the meaning of the poet exists somewhere between this and me, the reader, or between this and us, the group. I mean, the meaning of this poem now exists within this room, within this group. And the great poets, I think, know that. They know that they're not writing a telephone directory. I mean, the meaning of the telephone directory exists in the telephone directory. Simple as that. Let me find that passage I was going to refer to earlier. This is actually, as I say, he wrote this. Where have you hidden, my beloved? I left me moaning. You fled like the stag after wounding me. I went out calling you, and you were gone. These first verses we know from the accounts of the witnesses that were written in the prison, were written in the dungeon at this time of disintegration. I mean, that in itself is remarkable. Else about John, that someone in this extremis can do something like this is extraordinary. When he was ensconced in Granada later on, as I said, he wrote the commentaries. And the commentaries and collected works of John are actually not very much. That's why it's good to do your doctorate or something on John the Cross. Actually, as a scholar said to me, I said, why did you choose John? Because he didn't write much, so it didn't have much of a big task. So there's not that much. I mean, that's more or less what we have. A lot of it was destroyed, and we have many accounts. Because of all the problems and persecution, we have many accounts of bags of his letters and bags of his writings being burned. We lost an awful lot. We know at least two texts were destroyed. One of them is called The Secrets of the Solitary Bird. We know that one was destroyed. Again, people speculate, well, did he think that the doctrine was too dangerous? Who knows? Interestingly enough, when the first collected work was released, very quickly, collected works of John took a good 30, 40 years for it to come out, so quite a long time. But even in the first collected work, it came out, I think, about 1630 or so. Don't quote me on that. Even in that collected edition, they didn't include spiritual character at all. They thought this was too dangerous to put in that point. That only came into publication a little later on, about 50 years or there. So even then, it wouldn't be considered suspect. He writes, anyway, he basically wrote the commentaries because friends, nuns, lay people, and said to him, they listened to his poetry, they got fascinated and said, well, what does it mean? So he wrote the commentaries in answer to those questions. And he writes, since these stanzas, this is to Mother Ana de Jesus, who would later become founder prior of the reform to Paris and Flanders and the Low Countries. And Ana de Jesus, he writes, so since these stanzas were composed in a love flowing from abundant mystical understanding, I cannot explain them adequately. That's what I should have said to that bloke a few weeks ago. I cannot explain, here's him saying, I cannot explain them adequately. Nor is it my intention to do so. I only wish to shed some general light on them, since your reverence has desired this of me. I believe such an explanation as this will be more suitable. It is better, he says, to explain the utterances of love in their broadest sense, so that each one may derive profit from them according to the mode and capacity of their spirit. Can you hear the professor of Salamanca? I mean, he writes very elegant. I mean, even his hands, because very Teresa's scrawl, it seems there on. That's true. But John's a very So he says, it is better to explain the utterances of love in their broadest sense, so that each one may derive profit from them according to the mode and capacity of their spirit, rather than narrow them down to a meaning unadaptable to every palate. So adaptability is very important. Francisco de Osuna writes at the beginning of this book of prayer, there are 10,000 types of person. And there are 10,000 types of prayer. The prayer is individual. I cannot say, okay, Mary, this is how God speaks to you. This is what God is going to tell you to do. Elizabeth, this is what God does. How can anybody know what the spiritual path is when the others come? We all have our own path. We all have he calls it at one point, interior bodega. You know the bodega, the wine house. The wine bar. We all have an interior wine bar. You'll see a picture of it. We all have the interior wine bar, and that's where the fun starts. Because fun, we're laughing, and that's very important. Because John, we hear the cats, whenever they say, whenever John gave a talk, we always ended in great laughter. And both John and Teresa always talk about joy, laughter, pleasure. Teresa again begins the interior castle. She says, what is it? What is the journey of the soul to God? The place where the Lord finds delight. Delite. Or regalo. She uses the word regalo, which means like flirtation. It's a very sexy word, regalo. You know, the place where God flirts with us. No wonder the Inquisition couldn't stand it. I mean, they really push the boundaries all the time. So we find the places, Teresa, where God flirts with us. You know, the life of the Spirit is a flirtation. It's there in the Old Testament. You seduced me, Lord, and I allowed myself to be seduced. Remember? Hosea. Jeremiah. You seduced me, Lord, and I allowed myself to be seduced. So it's a play. The Hindus talk about the relationship of the soul with God is like a play. A game. It's a game. Fun. Yeah. A waste of time. Yeah. An absolute waste of time. The life of prayer is an absolute waste of time. You must remember that. The life of prayer is an absolute waste of time. It's like playing chess. Teresa herself says the life of prayer is like playing chess. Or indeed, she said, like watching a bullfight. She was a Spanish lady of her time. So rather than narrow them down to a meaning unadaptable to every palate, as a result, though we give some explanation of these stanzas, there is no reason to be bound to my explanation. See, he says himself, I mean, he says these poems just came to him, you know, where they came from. They came, and they're there, you know. And I'm going to give you what I think they mean, but I may not be right. For mystical wisdom, which comes through love, this is the Theologia Mystica, the hid divinity. Mystical wisdom, which comes through love, and is the subject of these stanzas, need not be understood. Not a theology of the head. Yeah. Remember, Teresa said, it's important at this time not to know much, but to love much. The theology of the heart, it's a restructuring of the heart. It's a reorientation of the heart. It's a subject that need not be understood distinctly in order to cause love and affection in the soul. For it is given according to the mode of faith for which we love God without understanding him. We're always trying to put God in a box. We're always trying to clasp him, put him in a box, but no, we can't. Great. Come on. And he won't let us. Well, try as we want. So what I've got you here, So what we're going to do, we're just going to lean up in the time left for us. We're going to lean up against the poem, and we're going to lean up with it, with the Sisters of Lebanon, Harissa in Lebanon. Have you been there? Larry's been. I've never been there. Love to go. And the Sisters of Lebanon, the Carmelite Sisters, in the 400th anniversary of John's death in 1991, they painted, they leaned up against the Pope, and they painted these icons. And they're extraordinary icons, because what they've done, they're obviously women of prayer, Carmelite Sisters, they're women who know the poem extremely well, but they're also in the Orthodox tradition, so they use Orthodox symbology, the iconography. So the one I was reading this morning, the intro to the Royal Academy exhibition of Byzantium by William. So lots of talk about icons and the importance of that. You've got wonderful examples of icons here. So for each stanza of the poem, they've chosen a different icon to represent. And the poem itself really is a description of the whole spiritual journey. Traditionally, in the Middle Ages, they talked about the spiritual journey in three parts. And Teresa and Ignatius all talk about this. The state of purification, and this is the first four stanzas or so of the poem. The state of illumination, which is stanzas 5 to 13 of the poem. And then the state of union, which is 13-14 to the end of the poem. Now, in a way, the spiritual canticle is unique amongst John's poems, and one of the reasons I've chosen it, because the spiritual canticle is one of the poems that encompasses all the stages of the way. The dark nights of the soul, the one I mentioned earlier, which is perhaps his most famous poem, is really a poem of the purification, the way of purification, the way of darkness. The living flame of love, we also mentioned earlier, is the poem of union, ecstatic union. The spiritual canticle encompasses all stages of the spiritual journey, a bit like Teresa's interior castle. You can compare, students write essays on this all the time, you can compare the way that Teresa speaks of the spiritual journey in the interior castle with the way John does it in the spiritual canticle. The sisters have started their icons. By the way, these are next to the tomb of the saints now in Segovia, with a picture of John in the habit of the Carmelite. They say the saint is in the grotto of a mountain, doubly symbolise the ascent of Mount Carmel and the Dark Night. We have two commentaries on the poem, The Dark Night, just to confuse matters. One of the commentaries is called The Ascent of Mount Carmel, and the other commentary is called The Dark Night. Yeah? But they're actually two commentaries on the same poem. So whenever you see people refer to The Ascent of Mount Carmel, that's actually a commentary on the poem, The Dark Night. The white of the saints, they say, is contrasting with the dark of the grotto. Again, contrast, black and white, fire in the night. Below in the rock are the representations of the ladder of ascent, an old ancient symbol for the progress of the soul to God. John refers to it as the La Escala Secreta, the secret ladder, he calls it in the poem. On the right of the saint, a tree represents the cross. So vital to John, so central to his theology. He calls it the Arbol de la Vida, the tree of life. On the left of the saint is La Fuente que mana y corre, the fountain that runs and flows. Fountain, again, is an extremely important symbol. I mean, obviously, water is a very key symbol for Teresa, but also for John. He writes an extraordinary poem in the City, La Fuente, and Ian Matthew, who writes very well on this, says that when we read La Fuente, if we read La Fuente, we can imagine John in the cell in Toledo, listening to the waters of the river Tajo beneath the cell, and hearing those waters, and not a very good translation this. Aquella eterna fonte está escondida. That eternal spring is hidden, for I know well where it has its rise, although it is night. I do not know its origin, for it hasn't one, but I know that every origin has come from it, although it is night. I know that nothing else is so beautiful, and that the heavens and the earth drink there, although it is night. I know well that it is bottomless, and that no one is able to cross it, although it is night. Its clarity is never darkened, and I know that every light has come from it, although it is light. I know that its streams are so brimming, they water the lands of hell, the heavens and the earth, although it is night. I know well the stream that flows from the spring is mighty in compass and power, although it is night. I know that the stream proceeding from these two is preceded by neither of them, although it is night. The eternal spring is hidden and is living bread for our life's sake, although it is night. It is here to call to creatures, and they are filled with this water, although in darkness, because it is night. This living spring, which I long for, I see in the bread of life, although it is night. Imagine writing that in the cell, can't you? And the rhythm, although it is night, although it is night. It's almost like a consolation to him. Or even if he's in this terrible darkness, he knows that the living water is there. On the top is Christ, top left. A vision recorded by the saint in Segovia. He says at this point, Christ offers the flame of love. So that flame, again, very important. And on the right is the church at the top of the mountain, the height of mystical contemplation. And here too is the Mother of God, so central to the Carmelite charism, the Theotokos, the God-bearer. The Virgin is the Virgin of Mount Carmel, offering the scapular as protection. The face of John, they say, is based on an old sketch from Valladolid, and the sisters say that it represents a face transfigured by love. So for the first stanza, we've already heard, where have you hidden the beloved and left me moaning? ¿A dónde te escondiste, amado? And they have pastores, los fuertes, que fuertes, shepherds, you that go up through the sheepfolds to the hill. If by chance you see him, I love, tell him that I sicken, suffer, and die. And the sisters have used the iconography of the ascension. They put Christ in the mandorla symbol there. But can you see?
Okay.
Yeah. Try not to spill.
If I just do that.
So the sense of Christ's ascension, Christ's disappearance, going up, and the soul there long wonders where the stag has gone. You see the stag there, again the stag is an ancient Christian symbol for Christ. Here she seeks her love, seeking my love, I will head for the mountains and the waterside. I will not gather flowers, nor fear wild beasts. I will go beyond strong men and frontiers. Pointing out 1,000 graces, he passed these groves in haste, and having looked at them with his image alone, clothed them in beauty. And here we have the Pantocrator, the ruler of all things and God in all things. I remember that love John had of all creation. Who has the power to heal me? Now wholly surrender yourself. Do not send me any more messages. They cannot tell me what I must hear. And then you've got that lovely verse we heard at the beginning. All who are free, tell me 1,000 graceful things of you. All wound me more and leave me dying. I don't know what behind their babbling. The transfiguration. ¿Por qué pues has llegado? How do you endure, O life, not living where you live? Why, since you wounded this heart, did you heal it? And why, since you stole it from me, do you leave it so and fail to carry off that?
The red one.
Yeah, it was in the previous one as well.
Yeah,
but I think maybe the others.
They use the image of the Jewish prayer cloth. Jewish prayers.
I wonder if it was maybe under the scapular. So maybe there's a story about the scapular having been given and thrashed and then it coming through each of the successive ones. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. I think they use it as a symbol for the you're right. So many imagery. Yeah, there's so many imagery and layers.
Symbol of wedding.
It's also the red cloak, isn't it?
That comes later. This is still the Jewish cloak. And this is the Cristalina Fuente. Oh, spring-like crystal, if only on your silvered over face you would suddenly form the eyes I have desired, which I bear sketched deep within my heart. And they use the Veronica symbol. John comments, the soul feels that she is rushing towards God as impetuously as a falling stone when nearing its centre. And at this point, towards the end of the period of illumination, the soul, he says, begins to desire union. And here, he says, we begin to become persona Christi. We take on the image of Christ, like Veronica. The gaze, the stag, they say, gaze on the spring of living water welling up into eternal life. And now we hear the voice of the beloved. Withdraw them, beloved, I am taking flight. And then the bridegroom now speaks. Where the union begins. Return, dove, the wounded stag is in sight on the hill, cooled by the breeze of your flight. And John writes, the soul suffers much because she is close to God at this point. The supernatural light darkens with its excess the natural light. Another key metaphor to get this in the Living Flame of Love is John says that the journey towards God is like a log thrown on a fire, or coal thrown on a fire. At first, when the coal is thrown on, or the log is thrown on, all the darkness, all the rubbish, all the worms and gas and so forth comes out. So when we first encounter the love of God, all we can see is our own darkness, our own obscurity. But as the fire catches hold, the fire goes into the wood or the coal. So as we spend more time in the presence of God, God comes into us. And eventually,